Blog Talk Radio.
But the point is that I know how to handle these crises.
We are and always will be the United States of America.
Excuse me, Fox News.
A series of tubes.
I think we look pretty good.
I'll get Osama bin Laden, my friends. I'll get him. I know how to get him.
E pluribus unum. Out of many...
If some of those jobs are lost in this, so be it.
Thank you, Wisconsin!
Liberals and conservatives, Democrats and Republicans, moderates of all opinions, welcome to Civil Discourse. My name is Eric Brandt. With me, as always, is former Democratic State Senator Peter Baer. Peter, how's it going?
Going well, Eric. We've had a pretty interesting week. Packed full of events, and right up until yesterday, within a day of our program here. So we have a lot to talk about today.
We definitely do, and it was a big week for the healthcare industry. And joining us on the phone is State Senator John Erpenbach, Democratic State Senator of the 27th District. Senator, welcome to the program.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good. We're honored and very appreciative of having you on board with us here this morning, Senator.
Well, thanks.
Thank you very much for calling in. Senator, this week, as you know, the Affordable Care Act wrapped up its enrollment period, and the federal government saw 7.1 million people enroll in the healthcare exchanges on the federal exchanges, millions more on Medicaid expansion, things like that. In Wisconsin, it's a little bit bittersweet because we saw 77,000 people knocked off of Badger Care, and you made some statements about this week. Can you kind of explain to our listeners what happened and what we can still do about it?
Sure. With the passage of the Affordable Care Act, there was money included for all of the states to expand their Medicaid coverage. Basically, we would go from 100% of federal poverty level up to 133% of federal poverty level. The governor not only chose not to have Wisconsin run its own exchanges, he also said no to the Medicaid money. So as a result of that, about 77,000 people lost their Badger Care. There are some people who are picking it up as a result of other people being kicked off. And had we just taken the Medicaid expansion, we would have not only been able to cover the people who just recently lost their Badger Care, but we would also be able to bring some new people in. So in the end, when the governor said no to the money, which is actually our money, it's money that Wisconsinites pay in federal taxes, and when it's an opportunity for us to get it back, the governor said no. Basically people above 100% of federal poverty level, which is not a lot of money by any means, were put into the federal exchanges. So it to me, it's real frustrating. The governor did it for political purposes only. You know, he's trying to be the most conservative guy out there. But as a result, you know, there's 77,000 some people who, because the governor wants to be really conservative, who lost their health care.
Senator, Citizen Action of Wisconsin reported that it's going to cost an additional $26 million per year in deductibles for these 77,000 people that were kicked off of Badger Care. That's a lot of money considering that these people are making lower wages than most of us. I read that they have 60 days to get into the exchanges, but I thought that the exchanges didn't kick in until you made 133% of poverty. Can you kind of explain how that works?
Yeah. Well, what will happen in the exchanges is that there'll be tax credits for the low-income individuals to help offset the cost of having the insurance. But pretty much what happens is when you sign on to the Affordable Care website, you fill out the financial information, it will determine immediately whether or not you're eligible for Badger Care. And if you are, then that is exactly where you will essentially be redirected to, a Badger Care website sign up. But if you're above 100% federal poverty level, you know, you're going to have to make your way through the exchange and figure out something that not only you can afford, but something that's going to give you the kind of coverage that you might need. So, again, all of this was certainly avoidable. It was 100% funding from the Affordable Care Act to cover that Medicaid expansion for the first 3 years. And what the governor was less than honest about was, you know, we could say yes to the expansion today and let the exchange shake out a little bit and then say no to the expansion next year. We could have opted out of it at any time we wanted to, and there would have been no penalty. We wouldn't have had to give any money back or anything to the federal government if we chose not to do it after we accepted it. So, again, it's a situation where somebody who might have had Badger Care 2 weeks ago woke up to find out that they were no longer eligible for Badger Care, didn't have a lot of time to get through the exchanges. And, you know, here we sit today with, you know, knowing full well that there's 77,000 Wisconsinites who don't have insurance right now.
Well, Senator, other than the governor himself, in terms of his effort to position himself as one of the more conservative potential contenders for national office, other than him personally in that regard, who benefits, if anybody, from that decision that he made? That's what I thought the answer would be.
It's a good question in that nobody benefits. I mean, Scott Walker's going to be able to go around the country to these conservative dinners and conservative fundraisers and said, I said no to the Medicaid expansion. Jan Brewer didn't. She saw the value of it. Texas found a sort of backdoor way to take it. Other conservative governors have taken it because, number one, it's the right thing to do. Number two, it actually saves their states money. And you know, make no mistake about it. It's not like the federal government's going to take the Medicaid expansion that Wisconsin's eligible for and cut federal spending. That Medicaid expansion money that's supposed to go to Wisconsin is going to go to other states to help offset their costs. So,
like even Arizona. You know,
what's that?
Like even Arizona, right, where Governor Jan Brewer accepted it. And would you think possibly, Senator, that that could be because the demographics of Jan Brewer's state is that there are an awful lot of retirees there who are living on, you know, a little above the poverty level. But there would be more of a political price to pay perhaps in Arizona for her on that one than here in Wisconsin for Walker, as well as the fact that she doesn't have aspirations for national office, I don't think. So she doesn't have to go to such preposterous extremes to position herself for that. But my follow-up question here is how can this governor be made accountable in this upcoming election for a kind of a crass political decision of that sort that hurts people without even having any policy benefit whatsoever?
Right. Well, it's just something that you know, I think Mary Burke is going to spend some time talking about. I know that she said as governor she would have taken the expansion. And we can, you know, we can take it next year. It's not like, you know, once we said no, it's no. But everybody has a family member or knows somebody who's struggling right now financially, and you know, they're being kicked off of Badger Care, and it's something that people I know will kind of keep in the back of their mind. It's the downside to it is it's not necessarily something you can explain in just a couple of minutes. But you know, if you get 5 or 10 minutes with somebody and explain it to them, they get it, they understand it, and they think it was a mistake for us not to take the money. So it's something that, you know, some people will go to the polls in November and they will know that the governor did this, and for that reason alone they may vote for Mary Burke. But again it's something where it's certainly going to be talked about during the election cycle, that I know.
Senator, when Scott Walker announced this decision, he had made a statement that he had found a way to cover more people for less money. That certainly doesn't look like that's the way that it played out. Can you talk at all about what he was referring to?
You know, when he said that, I had no idea what he was talking about, and pretty much, to be honest with you, I still don't know. I don't know.
I don't think that reflects a gap in your comprehension, Senator.
it's just something the governor will say things and that aren't accurate and actually believe them, and this is, I think, one of those cases where you can cover more people for less money, but that's not true. It just simply isn't. There are going to be more individuals coming on Badger Care, but that's only because there's not a waiting list anymore because a lot of people were kicked off. And again, the only way to cover more people at less cost was to take the Medicaid expansion that was in the Affordable Care Act. So I'm not certain what he was talking about.
Well, Senator, we and probably the majority of our listeners have painful memories of 2010, the last midterm election, which was catastrophic in so many respects, most significantly, I would say, in terms of the reapportionments. Here we come approaching the next midterm election. We all know that the traditional pattern is that the Democratic base is not as good as the Republican base at turning out for midterm elections. That's just the historical pattern, and we all know that. So somehow, to avoid, I assert anyway, that to avoid something as catastrophic as 2010 or even not quite as bad but similar to 2010, there has to be a way to change the turnout patterns in a midterm. And it seems to me that the minimum wage issue that President Obama has focused very strongly on and has been talked about at all levels and throughout the country, that might be the key and perhaps the only key to attracting a large number of base Democrats members of the base, I should put it that way, who might not normally bother to turn out in midterms to actually turn out. But we have to be blunt enough, it seems to me, to say you're voting yourself a $3 or whatever it is, $2, $2.75 or whatever the per hour raise is. And it may sound a bit crass. It may sound like Republicans will accuse Democrats of trying to buy votes and all that. But when in fact it reflects good public policy, sound public policy, why not be blunt about it if that's the only way? I mean, I think we ought to be having people standing whatever number of feet is the legal number of feet to stand from the McDonald's and Walmart, you know, you name it, where people are working for those kind of wages with, you know, telling them, I mean, for weeks and weeks before the election and then, of course, on Election Day, go take the time, go vote yourself a $3 an hour raise. I don't see any other way we win in 2014, but I think that way is a way we could win. Am I getting carried away here, or do you think there's merit to that?
Well, no, I mean, the majority of Wisconsinites certainly support an increase in the minimum wage. Mary Burke has gone on record as supporting an increase in the minimum wage. Craig Culver, who owns Culver's, has come up with a pretty good idea to make sure that his employees are going to be making more than minimum wage. He supports a minimum wage increase. And so that being said, a minimum wage increase is actually really good for the economy. It helps the economy. And that's going to, you know, that's one issue, but that's not going to be the overall single big issue. I think that's going to get people to the polls. What's going to get people to the polls is just the agenda that Governor Walker has been pushing, the agenda that's actually really kind of divided our state. There's no doubt about that, how divided we are, but also the agenda to try and privatize public services like our K-12 education system, you know, prison system and so on. And the biggest thing I think people are going to wonder about is the 250,000 job promise. We're not, you know, going to be so far away from that. And, you know, Minnesota's growing, Illinois is growing, states around us are growing, and we're still lagging very behind in job creation here in Wisconsin. So in the end, I think you're right in the fact that people will be voting their pocketbooks to a point, but also the fact that, you know, people would be voting just to try and get a job, try and change the direction of the state so our economy picks up so we create more jobs.
Senator, speaking about the economy, Mary Burke revealed her jobs plan last week, and Scott Walker's rebuttal was the proof is in the pudding, referring to his own jobs agenda over the last 3.5 years. And I would argue that he's right. The proof is in the pudding. He took $1 billion out of our economy with Act 10, and now we're ranking 35th in job growth, number 2 in the nation in job losses. 69 out of 72 counties saw an increase in unemployment. And I guess my question is, what is his jobs plan? What are the Republicans what you work with these people, you can talk to them in the back rooms. What actually is their plan?
Well, we had a special session on jobs, passed a couple of bills. Lately, you know, we just finished up our Senate session for the year. We didn't focus on the economy. We didn't focus on job creation. We didn't really do anything for small businesses. We haven't really done anything. And instead, it was more of a somewhat of a social agenda, you know, trying to take away voters' rights, and so on. That's kind of what we focused on. I don't know in the end what the governor, you know, what the governor's real jobs plan is or was. I don't think they do either. I think the idea was just, you know, get elected and hopefully the economy picks up. Well, it's not. And he's going to have to answer to that. You know, he wants to talk about anything but that $250,000, the 250,000 job promise. He'll talk about anything but that.
Senator, that was a...
he had against Mary Burt.
Oh, I was just going to say that you just made a really strong statement. You know, you've been in the Senate for some time now, and you don't know what the governor's jobs plan is. If you don't know what it is, that means that you guys can't vote on it. So that tells me.
We passed a couple of individual bills early on in the session, and the governor, even, you know, on other pieces of legislation, you know, whether it would be. Had nothing to do with job creation. The governor's response always was going to be, I don't know, I'm focused on the economy. That bill isn't on my radar screen right now. Well, actually, we're not. I mean, we really, truly aren't doing anything to try and help small business, big business, you know, medium-sized companies. You know, we passed some tax breaks and did some other stuff, but nothing has happened as a result of that. So, again, we are number two in job loss. We are 35th in job growth. The rest of the state outside of a couple of counties is really struggling. And we're not talking about that. We're not doing anything about that. And that's been pretty frustrating.
There was a survey published this past week that indicated also for minority residents of Wisconsin, African Americans in particular, a study ranked Wisconsin 50th out of the 50 states. Mississippi was the one right ahead of Wisconsin in terms of lack of future economic progress opportunities for young people of color, which, but at least we're first in another aspect, and I'm saying this with a bit of facetiousness, the disparity in incarcerations in Wisconsin is, we lead the nation, we lead the nation in racial disparity in incarceration to such a degree that if half the people of color who are incarcerated in Wisconsin were let out today, we would still be number one in the country. You can't say, you know, Walker hasn't helped take us to leadership in some area, but again, I'm being facetious because that's pretty bad. But one thing, Senator, that Eric and I have been quite worried about, and we don't hear a lot of people talking about right now, but we'd like to take this opportunity to ask you about a potential lame duck session, particularly if Walker loses to Mary Burke, and let's say we're fortunate enough to pick up a couple of seats and take the Senate back. Or it seems that there may be a mad rush to do some horrible things in a lame duck session, such as even changing the way we allocate our electoral votes in Wisconsin.
Or right to work.
Right to work and other, a whole horrible Koch brothers agenda that can be jammed right through the lame duck session. Has there been much thought given to protective measures in such a circumstance?
Well, no. I mean, if they want to call lame duck session, they can. The governor has gone on record on a couple of things. You mentioned right to work. He's gone on record as opposing right to work. But he has also gone on record saying that if a court ruling comes back on voter ID and it's not constitutional and there is time to deal with it, he'd call us into special session on that. And there's a couple of problems with that. First of all, if we're called into special session on voter ID because it's not constitutional, we are changing the rules, you know, right in the middle of the game here. And we have an election cycle right around the corner. And the clerks, poor clerks who are dealing with the legislation that we've recently passed, and they're very frustrated, very upset. And if we go into special session on this, it's even going to be more frustrating for them to try and do their job. And on that particular issue, I mean, you're basically affecting college students, you're affecting senior citizens, and you're affecting those serving in the military. And so on that kind of stuff, that would be really frustrating if we had to rush in and do something. But other than that, I haven't really heard talk of a lame duck session. I would be really surprised if we end up in a lame duck session. I would be really surprised if we did.
Well, that's reassuring to hear. Maybe our near panic about that possibility is not justified.
I hope so. We're kind of running up against the clock here, Senator, but there is at least one more topic here that I'd like to talk to you about. Is on Tuesday, the Senate passed unanimously a bill to allow the use of cannabis oil as treatment for seizures in children. And you said that you were pleased with the bill, but that it doesn't go far enough and you're allocating medicinal marijuana. On Tuesday, Dane County voted nearly 2-1 for legalization of recreational marijuana. What do you see as the future of this type of legislation, and what are your personal thoughts? Can you just kind of talk about it a little bit?
Sure. At some point, medical marijuana will be law here in this state. I have no doubt about it. I would wish that it would be sooner than later. Those in the medical community who were opposed to this before have basically changed their position on it and support it. Not everybody, but there are certainly some within the medical community that do. It's a situation where you are forcing a family member to go out and break the law to get marijuana for medical purposes for their husband or their wife, their son, their daughter, their grandparent, whatever the case may be. And this is an issue that isn't partisan. This affects every aspect of political life here in the state. And if you're a Democrat or a Republican or conservative or liberal and your husband or wife has, or your son or daughter has cancer, you don't care. You just want it to become legal because you're sometimes finding yourself in some pretty sketchy situations trying to go out and get some marijuana. So I do believe, and I think a little over half the nation has already had it legalized for medical purposes. So I do expect us to fall in line at some point. The whole idea of marijuana legalization for recreational purposes is a completely different debate. And it's a debate I don't think we can have until we get medical marijuana passed. And I couldn't even get a public hearing on it this session because the committee chair, Leo Gukmir, is really very conservative and doesn't support medical marijuana at all, even though she supported legislation that is just passed last Tuesday. But again, I do expect it to be legalized at some point for medical purposes. Like I said, sooner than later would be so much better for the families out there struggling right now.
If I'm not mistaken, I believe it was Melissa Sargent that submitted legislation for marijuana legalization. And if I recall, she was only able to find, I think, 7 Democratic co-sponsors. What is the feeling amongst the party? Is it just because it's an election year? Do people, do elected representatives genuinely not want us to go down that road? Is it just too politically risky? Why do you think she wasn't able to find enough support?
I don't know. I'm not certain. I know that we basically had 3 debates on marijuana. You had the oil, you had legalization for medical purposes, and then you had just full legalization. And I have been on this particular issue pushing very hard for you know, I've had 1 public hearing on the bill. I didn't have enough votes to get out of committee when I chaired the committee, so we didn't vote on it. But to me, if we can't even have a legitimate debate and a vote on legalization for medical purposes, recreational purposes, I think is just something we shouldn't even try and talk about right now, simply because we can't even get anybody to, not anybody, we can't get some key people to take seriously the medical aspects of marijuana. So once we get to that point, I also think sometime down the line here in the state, I don't know when, but sometime, I would imagine there'll be a vote for full legalization. But, you know, once we get to that point, that would be good. We can have that debate then. But right now, you know, just even trying to get it for medical purposes is like pulling teeth around that building.
Right. I really appreciate your political analysis of that, Senator, because if people aren't ready to vote for legalization for treatment of, for example, cancer patients who are undergoing chemotherapy, and Iraq and Afghanistan war veterans who have PTSD, clinically diagnosed PTSD, which
right.
If we can't even get them to do that yet, talking about recreational legalization is it for a future time.
Right, right.
Senator, go ahead.
Yes. Oh, no, I was just getting ready to wrap up because I had to run out to a meeting.
Okay. That actually takes us up to the end of our segment anyway. So I cannot thank you enough for joining us. You are a true fighter for workers and the middle class. You really led the way on Act 10, and it's really an honor to speak with you. So thank you very much for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thanks, Senator.
All right. My pleasure. Anytime, guys.
Bye then. And we actually have to go to a break quick. You are listening to Civil Discourse on Janesville Community Radio. We will be right back.
Check out the new business center that has opened in downtown Janesville. My office, JVL, provides full business services for home-based companies or the professional that only needs an occasional meeting space in the Rock County area. Professional, fully staffed, and convenient, My Office JVL can provide you with everything from a virtual office address to an on-site copy center, office space, and a full-sized conference room. www.myoffice-jvl.com.
And we are back. You are listening to Civil Discourse on Janesville Community Radio. We are live every Saturday morning at 11 a.m. Central Standard Time. You can go and check out blogtalkradio.com. Do a search for Janesville Community Radio and click on the link for Civil Discourse, and you can listen to us live. If you have any questions or comments, we'd love to hear your thoughts today. You can give us a call, 323-580-5769. My name's Eric Brandt. With me is Peter Baer. And we just finished up our conversation with Democratic State Senator of Wisconsin, John Erpenbach. And the senator was able to talk about marijuana laws, the badger care, things like that. It's just one thing that I wanted to note is that right now a new poll came out this week that is showing that 75% of Americans do believe that marijuana is going to be fully legalized nationwide within the not-so-distant future. And the senator was saying that right now it's not terribly feasible to go for full legalization. We just passed a cannabis oil bill, which is good.
He didn't say not terribly feasible. He said not possible.
Not
going to
happen
at all.
Yeah, until we get medicinal marijuana, which he also did say that eventually we'll get there, but not with this legislature and probably not with this governor.
Well, you remember the famous John Kerry line when he testified against the Vietnam War, which it came up again in the recent past. Who wants to be the last person to die for a war that made no sense, or words to that effect? You know, who's going to be the last person to get arrested and go to prison for something that is ultimately going to be legal?
Mm-hmm. Speaking,
just an idea.
Well, you kind of helped me segue here because we're going to spend just a couple of minutes, a couple of topics that you wanted to bring up quickly, Peter, is that speaking of prison, yesterday we found out that a grand jury has convened in the George Washington Bridge case with Chris Christie.
Right. That's a very significant piece of news that I think a lot of folks may not fully understand what the significance of it is, and to the best extent I can, I'll try and quickly summarize. When a federal grand jury is convened, it is convened under the authority of the federal judicial system, a federal judge, who has been approached by a U.S. attorney. In this case, it's U.S. Attorney Fishman, who has this particular jurisdictional responsibility. And what this means is that a U.S. Attorney Fishman brought to a federal judge a list of evidentiary items which would indicate to the judge that one or more federal crimes has probably been committed. Once the judge agrees that that is true, then the judge will allow the U.S. Allow a grand jury to be convened, and then the U.S. attorney can call witnesses. They are not, because the witnesses are not in that proceeding, which is simply to secure an indictment, so it's not an actual criminal trial, they aren't entitled to take the Fifth Amendment and say that they're not going to answer. So they're subject to the perjury, but yet they're still subject to federal perjury prosecution if they lie. So they have to answer the questions, and they better tell the truth, or at the risk of going to prison if they don't tell the truth and are found out not to have told the truth. So the first witness apparently who was called, and this has now been verified, was verified yesterday. So yesterday was really the key day. Everybody, you remember April 4th, 2014 was the day that it became known that the grand jury had been, at least publicly known, that the grand jury had been convened, and the first witness, one of the first witnesses, or the first witness, was the former press secretary to Governor Christie. The prosecutor, U.S. attorney, tends to work, in this case, his way up the chain. So the press secretary was there. That's still fairly high up in the administration, but not nearly as far as it's going to go. And they're going to keep getting more and more people. Wildstein will most. I would be shocked if Wildstein wasn't called as a witness. Assistant who had sent the email about time for traffic problems in Fort Lee, that sort of thing. People connected with Hoboken. It's been revealed that the grand jury is looking at both the Hoboken situation. That is the allegation by Hoboken's mayor that she was threatened with withholding of Hurricane Sandy relief funds if she didn't approve a certain development project that Governor Christie's personal friends had a financial interest in. And so they're looking at that because that's, of course, public corruption of the most hideous variety. And also the George Washington Bridge scandal, which is public corruption, in my view, of also a very ugly sort, but not even quite as bad as withholding relief funds from people who are in crisis. But in any case, those are both being looked at. It's almost inevitable. Here's the key point for our listeners. Once a grand jury has been convened, the odds are extremely high. It's almost a certainty that indictment will follow. Indictment means the United States of America versus Chris Christie or someone below Chris Christie. That's the only question now. The indictments, so, in my view, a 99%+ probability of indictments. Now the question is, who will be indicted?
Exactly. If you're reading headlines, you know, they can be misleading. The headlines are saying that this is closing in on Chris Christie. It could be, but we don't know that yet. Right now, they're just looking for answers to what happened. Somebody is most likely going to go down, but it doesn't mean that it's going to be Chris Christie.
It doesn't mean that necessarily, but it means this. If Chris Christie knew, the emperor will have no clothes in this process.
That's a frightening thought.
It certainly conjures up images that we would prefer not to have in our minds. But besides that, though, so to pile on just a little bit, there's an old saying, and it's funny because I was with my wife Vicky the other night, and I was saying that, you know, a grand jury will indict a ham sandwich, and then the commentator on said it's a famous thing in the legal profession that a federal grand jury will indict a ham sandwich. Well, a ham sandwich is something, but not from appearances, not unfamiliar to Governor Christie. So there may be some poetic irony.
I don't
there.
Have a.
There. That was rude.
I don't have a drum roll. Thing
I'm sorry.
For you,
or else I could've.
We're actually, you know, we're going to jump ahead of topic here because I want to spend some time on this. The Republicans have put out their budget again, the Paul Ryan quote unquote path to prosperity. The U.S. added 192,000 jobs in March.
It is a path to prosperity, but only for people who are already prosperous.
Prosperous, exactly. Yeah, exactly. We added 192,000 jobs in March. It's the 42nd consecutive month that we've seen private sector job growth. And we've now added back 8.9 million jobs since 2008. We lost 8.8. So we've added more jobs than we lost in the recession. The problem is that the adult population has grown by 14 million, and we're also seeing the influx of a lot of low-paying jobs, and the government has been shedding a lot of jobs. So we're on the right track, but we've still got a ways to go. Along with that, this week, the enrollment period for the exchanges for the Affordable Care Act came to a close on Monday night. The exchanges exceeded their goal of 7 million signups, reaching 7.1, and that number is only going to grow as the state exchanges release their numbers, and it doesn't include young adults who can now stay on their parents' insurance, nor does it include those who took the Medicaid expansion, and it also doesn't include people who got on private insurance plans outside of the exchanges. So this number is kind of an unknown right now, but we know it's over 10 million, and it's just going to keep growing. Over the weekend, Ted Cruz put out a poll on his Facebook page, just hoping to rally up Republicans against Obamacare, saying, you know, are you happy or unhappy with Obamacare, yes or no? And he was just flooded with people saying yes. And
that must have been such a rude surprise for him.
That for really had to sting.
Because, I mean, there's nobody more right-wing in in the American political scene that I can think of than Ted Cruz. And and so he must have been so sure, just like the Romney people were sitting around in their place, wherever they gathered on election night, sitting there thinking, even as Ohio was being declared for Obama and the game was over, they're still sitting there with pipe dream fantasies of that they're still winning. There's no way they can actually lose this election to Obama. Cruz must have had that same kind of feeling. There's no way that anything other than an anti-Obamacare vote will come as a response to my Facebook survey.
Exactly.
And lo and behold, wow.
Yeah, and I actually saw that as it was happening before it hit the news, and it was hilarious because I thought that someone was just pulling my chain, and I went and I looked. I was like, oh, my God. I mean, it was just everywhere. I went through probably a couple dozen responses, and I saw one that agreed with Cruz. As far as Obamacare goes, my own neighbor told me, and she's, you know, she's very Democratic, so it's not like she's a Republican who's, you know, changing bases or anything here. But she signed up for Obamacare through the exchanges, and she's getting insurance for $1.91 a month because she's getting subsidies from the government. She's got a high deductible, but she will be eligible for Medicare in 2 years. So as long as nothing bad happens over the next 2 years, she's going to be pretty well covered. Along with this victory, Obama took to the Rose Garden with Joe Biden on Tuesday and basically kicked off the 2014 campaign. They did their victory lap, which was great. And the Republicans also on Tuesday, most likely in an effort to draw attention away from the success of Obamacare, unveiled Paul Ryan's new budget, which is pretty much the same budget that he has been putting out for, what, 3 years now? Is this the fourth year, 2011, 12, yeah. 13, 14?
Yep.
Don't forget that this is what they ran on in 2012 when he was running with Mitt Romney. And for anyone who wasn't paying attention, they lost. So it didn't work out that well.
I heard that.
Overall, and this is from Daily Kos, Ryan would cut about $5.1 trillion from projected spending over the next decade, with nearly $3 trillion coming from repealing the health care law and revamping Medicaid. Still, Ryan's proposals fell short of balancing the budget, forcing him to resort to a vague promise of new revenue from economic growth to meet his goal of wiping out deficits by 2024. Now, what that means is that he's using something called dynamic scoring, and this is a fantasy way that Republicans try to convince us that these tax cuts are going to be paid for by the economic stimulus that they create, except it never turns out that way. Everyone who remembers the Bush tax cuts, according to Ryan, we should have seen a stark increase in jobs and revenue, but we've seen the second worst crash in U.S. history for the economy, and we've seen record deficits. So Ryan is pretty much just pushing a lot of austerity here, and something he's going after, excuse me, he's going after a lot of welfare programs. And what I find interesting about the fact that he's going to be cutting food stamps and things like that is that he's also a member of this party that refuses to raise the minimum wage. And we touched on this a little bit with Senator Erpenbach. Well, the people who don't want to raise this minimum wage, McDonald's, Walmart, also pass out literature to these low-wage employees telling them to get on food stamps and telling them to get on different government assistance programs. Well, they don't want to pay a livable wage, which would eliminate the need for that, for them to have to push it onto their employees. But they also don't want to pay the taxes needed to support those programs. So they're really just hanging everybody out to dry here. Yes. And I found a clip here of Bobby Kennedy, and anyone who listens to the show knows that I'm kind of an RFK freak. This is about a minute and a half long. I just want to play this and think about this. This goes back to 1968, I believe. I think he was already on the campaign trail. This is Bobby Kennedy, and just listen to what he's talking about.
Everything that makes man's life worthwhile, family, work, education, a place to rear one's children and a place to rest one's head, all this depends on the decisions of government. All can be swept away by a government which does not heed the demands of its people, and I mean all of its people. Therefore, this essential humanity of man can be protected and preserved only where government must answer, not just to the wealthy, not just to those of a particular religion, not just to those of a particular race, but to all of the people, as we are now committing ourselves to the achievement of equal opportunity. In fact, we must recognize the full human equality of all of our people before God, before the law, and in the councils of government. We must do this not because it is economically advantageous, although it is, not because the laws of God command it, although they do, not because people in other lands wish it so. We must do it for the single and fundamental reason that it is the right thing to do.
Right there, Bobby hits it on the head with that last line.
Haunting.
Do it because it's the right thing to do. And that's the complete opposite of what Paul Ryan's budget does. Rob Zurbon, yes. Anyone who goes to see him, you will inevitably hear him give a speech where he quotes Joe Biden, who says, "Don't tell me what your values are. Show me your budget and I'll tell you what your values are." And Paul Ryan's values are not in line with the vast majority of Americans at this point.
Well, I agree with you about that, Eric, but I would reinforce that also by saying that really you just, what you heard from Bobby Kennedy, what you played us, thank you for that, finding that clip, is really the other end of the spectrum from Paul Ryan's policy. We just have the two ends. We've just discussed basically on the program the two opposite ends of the spectrum. Bobby Kennedy's, which I think you and I, and according to the last presidential election, the majority of voting Americans subscribe to. And then there's the Paul Ryan one, which can help the rich get richer and increase the income disparity, which has risen to almost crisis proportions in our country, and which is one probably the single biggest domestic issue in the United States and in the world.
I completely agree, and I actually missed a cue. We've got to go to another break real quick here. It is about 11:45 on Saturday, April 5th. You're listening to Civil Discourse, and we will be right back.
Are you a consultant for Mary Kay, Pamper Chef, 31, or other home-based business? Do you need a place to have a home party that offers lots of parking, demo space, and bathrooms? Rent the family room at My Office JVL for your next party. Convenient and comfortable, My Office JVL is available evenings and weekends. Stop by 321 East Milwaukee Street or check out www.myoffice-jvl.com. You'll be glad you did.
And we are back. Sorry, we are back. You're listening to Civil Discourse. My name is Eric Brandt. With me is former Democratic State Senator Peter Baer. We are live every Saturday at 11 Central Standard Time. Go to blogtalkradio.com, do a search for Janesville Community Radio, and click on the link for Civil Discourse. If you have any questions or you'd like to contribute to our conversation, 323-580-5769. We're talking about the Ryan budget. And like we said, Ryan is cutting a lot of social safety nets. He's also cutting taxes, obviously, for the wealthy. I mean, you have to do that, you know, if you're going to submit a Republican budget. But, you know, we're talking about the things that he's doing that are hurting the poor and, you know, the working poor, nonetheless. And a lot of people who are against, say, raising the minimum wage, who want people off these government programs, the argument that I constantly hear is, if you don't have the skills for a good job, then go to school and get yourself the skills for a good job. Well, college debt now outweighs credit card debt in the United States. It's over $1 trillion. And I was looking for another clip here by Bobby Kennedy that I can't find. But when he was running for president, I think he was at an Indiana university, and he gave a speech, and he was obviously talking to students, and he said, how many of you support the student deferment for the draft? Undoubtedly, most of the hands go up, and Bobby said, why? Which, before I listened to what Bobby had to say, my hand would have gone up as well. But what Bobby said really struck home with me. He said, why should you, who already have the privilege of going to college, which most likely means that you're from a upper class family, middle to upper class, the working poor who can't afford to come to college, what if they just want to work at a gas station? Why do they have to worry about being sent to Vietnam? Because they want to spend their life in a different way than you do. It's the same
Valid
way
point.
Here.
Valid
How
point.
Come if you want to work in the service industry, maybe you really enjoy cooking? You know, I've got a friend who has 2 college degrees and he wanted to be a chef, but he can't find a job that pays over $20,000 a year. Where is the justification for something like that?
I don't know about that, although I can tell you that I have a son who's a chef in the Madison area, just outside of Madison, and he's earning, he's in his 20s yet, later 20s, and he's earning quite a bit more than that. So I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm sure it depends if you're in a high-end restaurant or a lower-end restaurant,
right.
But at the same, or maybe a franchise versus private industry too.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the fact of the matter is that if you're stuck at, you know, McDonald's or something, and believe it or not, there's people who don't mind working at a place like that. They go in, they get their paycheck, they go home, and they have their life. That's enough for some people, as hard as it might be to understand. Not everyone defines themselves by their job. And why should they not be entitled to a livable wage?
I agree, absolutely. But Paul Ryan does not agree with that. The Republican Party in general does not agree with that. They want to have the people there to serve them those items of food and so on and so forth. They just think that they shouldn't; those people shouldn't have to necessarily get a livable wage for doing so. They just really don't care, and that's profoundly disturbing. But the lines are clearly drawn. So I think, you know, I just want to address back to asking all of our listeners to contemplate, what are you going to do in this election year of 2014 to help make things better? Because that's what I think we all have to be thinking about right now. And if we don't spend a lot of time thinking about it, we're going to be sorry later.
We are. And all of those people that you see on TV wearing tea bags from their hats, they're going to be voting. Yep. All of the people, yep. the 640 people, I think, who are now able to spend unlimited amounts of cash under this McCutcheon decision. Anybody can spend unlimited cash, basically, but only about 640 people were bumping up against that barrier because it was so high in the first place. They're going to be voting. Their organizations are going to be voting. The people who don't necessarily support your lifestyle are going to be voting. Well, so yeah, you need to show up at the polls in 2014.
Look what's happening right here in Wisconsin now, Eric. I was hoping would there be enough time to mention it, and I will now. This past week, there was an election up in Iron County. For those who don't know, Iron County is right up at the very uppermost part of Wisconsin, up against the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, borders the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and has a very high concentration of minerals. The Gojibik taconite mine controversy is centered largely in and near Iron County. But get this. The population of Iron County is smaller than the population of Wanakee, one of the towns Senator Urbanbach represents. and Representative Hesselbein, who we had previously on our program. Iron County has fewer people than Wanakee, fewer people than Middleton. But the Koch brothers came and pumped money into that little tiny county to flip the county board, to make sure that all the votes are there for to rape the land. You know, the population be damned. Let's fool them. Just give them enough literature, millions of dollars worth of stuff to read that's going to get just enough votes to flip the board. And by the way, they didn't win every race they got into, but they won enough to get a bare majority, a slim majority on the county board, or that's going to be reliable to let them do whatever they please. And so there's, you know, a lot of times I think, I mean, this is the canary in the coal mine for our country here. People, I think, even at the national level, Eric, when you hear the talking heads, including the ones we like, as well as the ones we may not like as much or not like at all. But you hear about the Koch brothers, and you hear about them influencing races, you know, nationally, statewide, and this and that. But I don't think a lot of people really are recognizing yet. The Koch brothers are willing to get down to the point of a county with fewer people than Wanakee, okay? And to flip it so that the fact that that county happens to have the majority of the iron ore in the United States in it, and also other minerals of interest to the Koch brothers and their pals, means that they have to purchase the government there. And they have done that this week. And if anyone thinks they're going to stop at Iron County, I recommend a visit to Mendota State Mental Health Institute.
That's absolutely right. And if you think about it, it makes sense that they're going to do that, because it's a lot cheaper to fund a county board supervisor than it is a state senator or even a U.S.
senator.
Yeah. And you're going to have low turnout anyway, so you don't have to change a whole lot of minds.
Just those hundreds of votes. Imagine how easy it is for people with that kind of money to influence literally hundreds, when you only need to really flip hundreds of votes to get an outcome that's going to result in millions of dollars for yourself.
I was looking at the returns from Tuesday's election, and I believe in Fort Atkinson, they had some referendum on a school. As of Wednesday morning, it was tied 50-50 because four people voted. Four people voted on this referendum. That's how important local elections are. That is why people need to be showing up on these things. Now, if memory...
Four people in Fort Atkinson?
Voted on that one thing.
It was 2-2?
It was 2-2. I think it might have been for a community that surrounds Fort, which is like Koshkonong.
But still.
It was 2-2 on Wednesday morning, and I don't recall. I believe that was 100% reporting.
Well, recount. Time for a recount.
People who voted for it.
The nice thing about that recount is it won't cost millions of dollars.
Exactly. But if you want more information on this, I strongly recommend that you check out the documentary, The Billionaire's Tea Party, which is similar to Koch Exposed. And this might even be in Koch Exposed. I don't remember if I saw that one. But anyways, they go to, I want to say, one of the Carolinas where they were trying to flip a school board, and the Kochs got heavily involved to change something to do with segregation. It was something pretty down and nasty that the Kochs were involved with. And they did win, and then I believe the people were able to flip it back 2 years later. But this kind of stuff happens all the time if you go down to Texas, because they get involved with these school board races in Texas, and probably California or New York City are the two states that purchase the most textbooks. So based on what they order is what these companies publish, which is then what the rest of the country gets to choose from. So they influence these school boards and the state schools and all that stuff. They get the people they want buying the books that they want, which then floods the rest of the country, because that's what becomes available to everybody else.
There really has to be some pushback, you know, Eric, I thought is, you know, one aspect, and the biggest aspect probably is the turnout, and everybody's doing their part. As we asked Senator Cullen when we had him on recently, what can you do? Well, things like guys like you and I are doing, but there's all kinds of different things people can do. But everybody who has feelings, feels strongly about this, which I think is a lot more people than is recognized. Do something. Talk to neighbors. You know,
Put stuff on your Facebook page.
Put stuff on Facebook. Get organized. Just
whatever you're comfortable with. And that's what Noam Chomsky says. People ask him, what should I do? And he says, whatever your level of comfort is, whether that is just voting or you want to run for office or you want to start a super PAC, wherever your comfort level is, that's where you're going to exceed. So go for it.
Because if we don't do it, the outcome is going to be really a tragedy for our country, and an unspeakable tragedy is where these guys are headed. There was this most recent Supreme Court decision, which now lets these 600 and some people, and we say 600 and some because, as you pointed out, that's the number who bumped up against the limit before, so we know how they are. We know who the usual suspects are now. And so there's 600 of them who can literally give in every congressional race in the country now if they want to. Now, of course, they won't because so many of them, because of gerrymandering, are non-competitive. They don't need to. But you know that they will go to every single race in the country that is competitive and max out. All these 600 people will go max out in every competitive race. This is really grim. And we need to come out. And it seems to me that one thing we need to think about and talk about briefly is, there are some Democrats who have money too, you know. I mean, it's obviously there's a lot more rich Republicans than rich Democrats, but we do have some rich Democrats. Some of them are in Hollywood, some of them are on Wall Street, some of them are here and there. Bill Gates, I don't know if he's a Democrat, but he seems pretty humanist. And those Democrats who are of means are going to really have to step up this time to help fight off the money that's going to be coming from these other guys.
And remember that Paul Ryan is really the poster child for people like the Kochs and the Sheldon Adelsons. His budget also, as I said, it repeals the Affordable Care Act. And he said that even if they replace the Affordable Care Act, they're not going to put in the stipulation that you can't be denied for pre-existing conditions. He says that's too expensive. He would knock people off of insurance if they're, you know, between, what is it, 21 and 26, or between 18 and 26 and not going to school. He'll knock those people back off. He says it's too expensive. He cuts funding to combat climate change and expands oil production on federal land. He has major cuts to the Pell Grant program, or appeal of funding for the 2010 student loan reform signed by President Obama. And he eliminates subsidies to Amtrak, proposing reducing funds for the Transportation Security Administration. This is just a few things that Paul Ryan is doing, which is why it's so important that we're talking to you right now, Janesville and Rock County, because you're the ones who can vote this guy out. It's you. It's everyone in our base who is listening to this show. You are the ones who have got to be talking to your neighbors, because you guys can knock this guy out, which is why you are not going to want to miss next week's program when we have Amar Kalika, who is primarying Rob Zerban for Paul Ryan's seat. He is going to be joining us in the first half of the show. We're looking forward to that. Tell your friends. You don't want to miss that one. But that does actually take us right up to the end of this program. Thank you very much to everybody who's been listening. Be sure to check us out every week right here on Blog Talk Radio. Do a search for Janesville Community Radio and click on Civil Discourse. Every Saturday, we're live at 11. Be sure to check us out on iTunes. Give us a 5-star rating and subscribe. That way, every single week that we do a show, it comes right to your iPod. You don't have to do anything but plug it into your computer. Be sure to check us out on Facebook. Give us a like. Follow us on Twitter at symbol C. Discourse at symbol letter C discourse. Give us a give us an email, questions, comments, or concerns. Civil Discourse 2011 at hotmail.com. Thank you to 350 Madison. Thank you to the Rock County Democratic Party, the Rock County Progressives, Democracy Rocks, and the Economowoc Dems. You guys are all of our affiliates. We appreciate all the support we get from you guys. And most of all, thank you to you for listening. Please tell your friends and help us build our base. Seconds. Thanks a lot, Peter.
Thank you, Eric. And thanks again to Senator John Erpenbach, who was kind enough to join us and make some very helpful comments today.
Go Badgers!